Welcome to the Acro Chats podcast. This podcast is dedicated to the practice of acrobatics in the global acro community. I'm Sean.
And I'm Emily. We're partners and teachers based out of New York City, and we love acro. Each week, we dive into acro topics, including training tips and methodology, happenings and history of the practice, and interviews with acro practitioners from around the world.
Come hang with us as we explore the world of acro and its global community.
Welcome back, everyone. I'm Sean, here with Emily.
Hi.
From the basement of Warrior Bridge, this is Acro Chats.
Our luxurious recording studio.
Sitting on the floor, huddled over a laptop, sitting on a...
yoga blanket.
Well, I was going to say it's sitting on the feet-up trainer. Real good reference there. But I kind of feel like people that listen to this podcast will know what a feet-up trainer is.
If you don't, you should. Look it up.
Yeah. Anyway... we have a topic for today's episode.
We're going to talk about whips.
How scandalous, Emily.
It's funny because I always forget that people that don't do acro think of whips as like a very specific thing that's not acro related. But it's an acro skill.
So, in acro, a whip can be defined as a usually an elbowing movement where the flyer swings as from position to position, or back to the same position.
Yeah, it's often a skill that the flyer swings off of the base's feet. It's sort of pendulum-like, and there are different starting and ending positions, and you can swing like on base feet. You can end up on the base's hands. Apparently, you can also do whips like standing on hands, but like I haven't really.
Yeah, so the primary ways that people do whips in elbowing acro are usually from either a bird position or a front balance position. So the base's feet on the flyer's hips, or a throne, a seated position. So usually the flyer is seated on the base's feet, and that's kind of it. That's what a throne is.
Well, yeah, you swing from a seated position through to another seated position, or to like a front balance or back balance position, vice versa. You start in a plank or bird and swing to another plank or bird or to a seated position.
So I remember the first time I saw a whip, it was like, how the hell did that work? Because it seemed like the flyer like went through the base's feet. And in a way, they went between the base's feet. Well, yeah. Not in a way. That's what they did. But
so
depending on how loose you are with through, maybe it counts.
The base's feet kind of stay connected to the flyer's pelvis, and the torso swings through in between the legs, generally speaking, in most whips. And it's kind of a little bit of an optical illusion, which is why it's really a cool skill. We can sort of define it by where it starts and what direction it goes in.
Yeah. And these are, before we go into like our breakdown of how we kind of, how we try to teach whips as far as like terminology, there are also other types of whips. I'm not sure if we mentioned it, but you can whip to like a bird on hands. So you can whip like a really common whip to hands would be from like a shoulder stand on the base's hands. The base puts their feet behind the lower back of the flyer, and then the flyer arches around to the base's hands. So that would be a different type of whip, and that can happen in a variety of ways. And pretty much any transition that kind of pivots around a part of the base, I think, could be loosely included in this category of whip. But the whips that we're going to talk about for a little bit and kind of lay out our terminology for are kind of the ones that would progress into whip pops. They link together, and they primarily stay on the base's feet, and they create really cool swinging tricks.
So If you're familiar with the basic acro vocab, here's a little like primer for your whip directions and positions. We say front swing when we're talking about a whip where the flyer starts in bird, swings through and back up to bird. Right, so it's just a little pendulum swing and back up. That's a front swing. Backswing is...
Or I would usually say a backwards whip.
Yeah, backwards whip.
So a backswing would be anything where the flyer is starting seated and they begin to fall backwards, essentially. And we'll talk about like how they fall backwards, mm-hmm. but that would be the initiation of the whip. So like a front swing that comes back up to bird is
a front facing front swing.
A front facing front swing, but that also it has an element of a backswing. So it goes through and then the coming back is the backwards rotation component of it. But we would call bird going through the legs of the bass and back up. We would call that a front swing. And then we would say or that would be also a front-facing whip or a forward-facing whip. So we use front swings and front whips and back whips and forward-facing and backward-facing to kind of break down which whip we are talking about doing.
Bird, swinging through, back up to bird, front-facing, front swing.
So if we were doing a reverse throne that's going to whip backwards into a reverse bird... That would be a
backwards facing back whip.
Thank you, Emily. But you could also do a reverse bird swinging. Well,
and coming back up to reverse bird.
You could do that, and that would be a backwards facing
front swing.
Thanks, Emily. You just got to win these ones. Anyway, those would make up kind of these like kind of four main directions of whips that, at least that we play with. There's, like we said, there's other whips from different positions. But all of these whips are nice because they also have a ability to pop into them and pop out of them. And that's where we would get whip pops and pop whips.
And that sort of comes from the fact that you start on the bass's feet and end on the bass's feet. As we'll get into, we feel that whips are incredibly timing dependent. And so if you have a really well-timed whip on the bass's feet, you can link it to a pop because of, you know, just how the timing goes. It's pretty easy to do so.
Yeah, and I would say, you know, timing is an element of calibration. And that's something that we've done quite a bit with whips, and you know, because we've done so many whips together, we've been able to kind of like get into the nitty gritty of it a little bit.
Do you remember? This is like, you know, letting people in on our humanity.
Please don't.
do you remember when we like had a more intensive period of practicing whips and whip pops and like getting really calibrated on it?
Yes.
I broke my hand in 2017. So we had like 6 weeks where we couldn't do any kind of like hand to hand or skills that require a hand connection. And we also had planned to teach whip pops approximately 6 weeks away. So we just had like an intensive period of time to just be like, we got to get these really, really good.
Yeah, it was, so we had already been practicing whips for a little while. I got to give credit. Josh Young was probably one of the first whips classes I took at Divine Play. Josh Young, Aaron Lynn, Christine Moonbeam, and Lizzie Tomer, they taught a day long on pops and whips, and I don't think that was the very first time I did whips, but that had to be one of the... There was also Avner from Israel. He had taught a little bit of whips, but for a long time, these were really, like, mysterious, but, like, over time, we... once you, like, start to get them and it starts to become like possible, it doesn't take so long for it to start to become pretty consistent if you're consistent with it.
I mean, particularly if you get to practice it with the same person for a while, you can start to iron out, you know, like I'm sure we'll get into a lot of this, but whips can be the kind of skill where it's like, it happened, but it was like kind of choppy and maybe not the most beautiful thing. But then when you really refine it and get calibrated and the timing goes really well, it looks very, very impressive, but it's just that physics is to your advantage and you timed it well, and then it starts to look really impressive.
So one of the reasons why we had to get more specific about like the timing of our whips was when we started practicing whip pops. Originally I wanted to give a shout out to Dustin and Ashley, the Acro Mutants, formerly known as the Acrobats, formerly known as. No, they're still the Acro Mutants in our heart, and they taught a really great whip pop workshop at a Acro Share, man, memories.
Oh, yeah.
And one more fun story about that, we were partnered with Nathan and Isis for their first whips workshop, which was a whip pops workshop. So that was a great time. But anyway, in that workshop, they showed us like their progressions for it, and it was great because they train primarily by themselves, and they kind of figure out ways to self-spot things and like break it down into little pieces. So they were really great at helping us with that. And then when we started to take it home and started to play with whip pops, we just found that if we wanted to make them work, we needed to know when the pop was going to come. So that really like just involved us like starting to like explore like more calibrated timing. And then we got like real excited about it, and we had Whip Pop Anonymous scheduled for right before New York Acro Fest, I believe, that year.
Yeah, in 2017.
Yeah, and we, like, the big thing is we were going to do our backwards whip pop. So starting and thrown, whipping backwards, and popping into...
thrown.
Into thrown again. So the flyer does, like, a full rotation. It's pretty neat.
Yeah, so a back whip normally starts in thrown. The flyer essentially falls backwards and swings around to bird. But when you add the pop, it gives it an extra quarter rotation to thrown.
This is one of the actually more common pitfalls in whips, is people doing that whip pop, and then when it goes behind the bass's butt, like not over their face, it's a lot harder for the bass to save anything. Or if the flyer like falls backwards, they might like reach their hands out behind. So that was like kind of the last thing we wanted. So.
And we were in this sort of unique position also of like, I was 3 weeks out of hand surgery, 4 weeks out of hand surgery. So we just had to train it in a way where there was no way that I was going to like catch myself on my hands on the floor.
Yeah. And through that, like calibrating to teach that workshop, I think that was really like kind of what like got us excited about it and really started to like explore what we could do with it. And I think, the workshop went, there was like five people, but it was a great workshop.
Yeah.
Dan's ceiling was there.
So, one thing to note is, it's kind of unclear like the origin of whips. So Icarian practitioners do like whip backs, which is a very arched shape. But this sort of swinging from the bass's feet and linking it to things, it's possible that it's a uniquely acro yoga skill.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if it popped up in like some other form. We actually have it in the show notes to, I put it into the show notes that we would talk about the whip backs in a little bit. But I think that as far as I understand it, it's a pretty recent development. Like a flyer swinging around the base's feet. Like, it definitely could have shown up somewhere in Circus, but, you know, one reason why that may have happened is, like, the folded leaf position and, like, the straddle bat position from acro yoga, L-basing acro, where it used to be used a lot for, like, therapeutics, because it's, like, the flyer's hanging down and is kind of close to the base's, like, chest. But, like, yeah, that position, and you can be, straddle bat would be, like, the head is towards, you're, like, belly buttons facing each other, and folded leaf is, like, belly button of the flyer, like, facing through the base's leg. There's a therapeutics from that position, but then if that flyer adds body tension and creates a more rigid shape, that shape can swing. And through, like, people playing more with, like, L-basing transitions and, like, things like side stars and cartwheeling, people started to probably wonder what they could do without hands.
So this kind of brings us into, you know, the actual components of the skill, I would say. Like, if you're a flyer and you are in a straddle bat or a folded leaf position, which means you're kind of, your legs are in straddle pike and the base's feet are holding at the hip crease. You're kind of like suspended by the shelf of your straddle pike. If you tuck your tailbone, hollow your upper body and create tension, that shape can start to swing from the base's feet if they give you a little bit of space to swing. And that shape and creating rotation is a huge part of the whip. So kind of the awareness of, I think it relates to tumbling, but it's not like you certainly don't need to tumble to do whips, but the ability to kind of increase the intensity of your hollow and the tuck of your pelvis to create rotation is definitely something that also happens in tumbling.
Yeah, so it is, in my opinion, it's very much tumbling. It's just whips only really usually have like 360 degrees of rotation. So you kind of, you might be changing directions also. But yeah, I believe whips 100% to be tumbling. One thing I think is like worth pointing out is there's a really specific flyer shape for whips. So like I would call it the flyer whipping shape. So Emily referred...
This is for the whips on the feet.
Yes. This is any of the ones that are like swinging through folded leaf or straddle bat coming from bird... Or thrown. Reverse bird, thrown, yeah, all those things. The flyer, as they swing around the base's feet, like through the bottom portion, is going to be in a hollow straddle pike position. So hollow meaning they're not back bending, they're not arching, they're rounding their back. Straddle meaning their legs are wide apart, ideally with the knees straight and the feet pointed. And... the pike. There's going to be about a 90 degree hinge at the flyer's hips. And this is like, 90 degrees, but still with like the rounded back. So whatever that kind of...
Yeah, it's not the easiest thing to maintain for a lot of different reasons. It's a aggressive amount of tailbone tuck, I would say. The posterior pelvic tilt, the lower back rounding is the sort of, it is one of the most important things, and it creates rotation. You know, it helps you create more rotation. It can gather speed and add momentum to your rotation. So that like lower back pelvic tilt position. But then the legs, the straddle pike, if your straddle flexibility is a little bit limited, it's going to feel like you have to be pulling your legs wide the whole time. If your straddle pancake flexibility is really flexible, you actually have to kind of stop short of your full flexibility. Like it's really common that really flexible flyers will be piking really hard and pancaking their legs, and it actually kind of grabs the base's feet in an unhelpful way.
Yeah, and it just basically inhibits the whip from swinging because you've just basically pinched yourself around the base's feet. I've also seen it where the Flyer has too wide of a middle split and they don't have really anything to counterbalance their torso. So there's like a, it's not like the most flexible position. It's really like a rigid, almost like dead bug shape with a straddle. Yeah. So when we're teaching this, like a lot of times we'll have people just get into that shape, and you could do it as like a tightness drill where you're rocking the, that shape, the person who's taking that shape, you're just kind of moving them around and they're allowing themselves to be like an object.
Yeah, there's a lot of drills that we teach in warmups to kind of reinforce the shape and reinforce the tension that's required. I think that's probably the hardest part is like once you start to add momentum and swing, it's easy if you're flying it, particularly because in a whip, you know, we don't like to talk about whips as a skill that's really dangerous because it really is not if you do appropriate progressions and you understand self-spotting. But it is a skill where the flyer's head is swinging towards the floor in a lot of these directions. So it can become tempting to do extra things with your body shape to help, but it actually becomes unhelpful.
Yeah, and I think a big part of it is, you know, I referred to the first time I saw a whip, there was like this mystery around it. And I think people imagine that they're gonna need to do really big things to make a whip happen. And a lot of this has to do with like the ending shape of these swings. So any of this, well, I guess we could say whips that don't have a pop will usually end in bird. Is that true?
Yeah,
whips that don't have a pop will end in a bird. So when you're coming up to that bird, you don't want to change your shape is the thing. You don't want to change the position of your lower back out of that tucked tailbone shape. And people think that they're going to need an arch
to be in a bird.
To be in bird. So they try to like swing their head up, look up. So the number one thing we tell people is to like stay looking at your belly button, keep your tailbone tucked as you're coming up. And then like the big thing is, it's a podcast, so you can't really see that, but when a flyer arches, it takes away the space for the base to get their feet back into position. And when they're rounded, there's basically just like, there's like this big opening from like their belly being pulled away from the floor where the base can turn their feet back in to get into a bird.
Yeah, and also just like from a safety standpoint, if anything kind of, you know, is mistimed or whatever, if the flyer is in a chin tucked, rounded position, it's always a safer position to fall in than a chin out arched position. And I mean, not to mention that it just, the physics of it makes the skill much more possible, but the visual of finishing in a bird shape means that many people feel like they have to kind of arch and lift.
So what we wind up seeing when that happens is like it makes the lever longer because when you're hollow, you're very close. But then when you arch, like you've suddenly made the that side of it way heavier, and you've also taken away the space for the base to get their feet in. So if they didn't already have their feet there. So what kind of winds up happening is someone does a whip, let's say they start in bird, they swing through, and then they lift their head too early, and what winds up happening is they basically get like a quarter of the way up, and they just kind of like plop right back down. And sometimes it's fine, and they just kind of wind up in a folded leaf, or sometimes they'll maybe slide through the base's legs, potentially.
Or, you know, worst case scenario, you're like head towards head. You know, like, because you're coming back down at the base's face.
Yeah, but that doesn't really happen that much.
Yeah.
Be a fear monger.
Most bases get their hands up to catch the flyer on if they're falling back down.
Yeah. So we consider self-spotting to be, like, a really big part of practicing whips because...
In fact, most of the progressions that we teach are based on self-spotting.
Yeah. Because as a base, if you can't, for one, you have to keep yourself safe. If the flyer is, like, swinging around you, you need to be able to, like, make sure they're not going to crash into you because you're the base. Mm-hmm. You're like holding them up in the air. And also, you know, like can't take too many hits in this. But the other thing is like whips happen really low to the ground. Like whips just don't really happen with a lot of time for a spotter to work or like really ideal body positioning because the spotter is going to either need to be squatting down very low for most of the dangerous parts of whips, or they're going to need to be like sitting or kneeling. So we always approached whips primarily as like a calibration skill, rather than like a, like something that we needed to like catch one.
So from the basing side, self-spotting is like a huge component that it's actually part of the progressions that we teach. But then there's also the legs. Base legs are, it's really unusual. There's not really like a similar skill. And it's hard. It's hard when you're first learning it.
Yeah, so when you're doing these L-basing whips, the base's legs have to just do this pretty unique shape that I can't really compare it to too many other things. But if we say like that, like let's take that standard 90 degree L-baser laying on their back with their legs straight up in the air, I would call the movement like, I don't know if I would call it a micro bend, but it's like maybe you're bending your knees like 2 inches, like you're getting your feet an inch or two lower to the ground, not very much. And then primarily you're externally rotating and like abducting your knees. So pulling your knees apart into what kind of looks like a diamond that doesn't connect at the top.
Right. The hard thing about that is, so the flyer still has to be attached to your feet, right? So you have to rotate your knees really as far apart as possible, but you have to still kind of hold the flyer with your feet. So you're squeezing your feet in and trying to pull your knees wide.
So the goal of the position is to create, I would say, just enough clearance that the flyer is not going to scrape your legs, or you're not going to create enough friction that it inhibits the flyer swing. So we basically tried not to touch the flyer, but you also don't want to bend your knees too deep.
Then the flyer will
touch you.
They'll scrape across your chest or belly as they swing through.
Yeah. So, you know, there's like a long list of calibrations, and you can take our class or look up our All About Whip series on watch.warriorbridge.com if you want to like see the specific progressions for these. But like the base learning how to hold their legs in this really specific position and then not get knocked over as the flyer swings around that is kind of, to me, the main base skill. So like base skill number one, like be able to spot anything that you whip. Like self-spot anything that you whip. And then holding your legs in that position without getting knocked around is really one of the big things that determines how clean the whip is gonna go, like what the ending position of the whip is. And then like whether you can do something like a whip pop. And I would say, like, again, it comes back to taking this back to the whip pops. One of the reasons why it's a good thing to try harder skills, things that kind of push your ability, is they make you refine your more foundational techniques. And I think that's what whip pops really did for us, was they made us really add a layer of specificity to, like, how we whipped. And then, like, you know, we've gotten a lot of feedback that we teach whips in like a very different systematic kind of way than a lot of others.
Teaching online also has really made that, like, we've kind of refined a bunch of little like micro progressions because it's like, you know, there's only, you have to convey everything verbally and visually, and there's no like physical ability to kind of touch the people in through the screen.
Yeah, and so, it's also like, more delayed giving people feedback. Like even if you say something immediately to someone like one-on-one, like if it's Zoom, it's kind of hard to tell if they're talking to you exactly. So we got a lot of practice with that. And then, you know, just the more you teach it, the more you see what can go awry, and you learn to add like extra steps, extra progressions.
So if you listen to our Pops episode, which came out the day that we're recording, we use the same timing for all of our Pops, and we actually use essentially the same timing for our whips, and I think that's really helpful because the timing then links to our respective shapes, and if our respective shapes happen at the correct time, then things go really well, and then we can link it to things. So I still feel like a whip has up, down, up, just like our popping skills or any other dynamic skills.
Yeah. And, you know, that's one of the big things that we like to emphasize is whips have a tempo. So a lot of times, like, it's really common you see, yeah, I think maybe we talk about, like, let's spend the last few minutes talking about the common pitfalls we see in whips because, you know.
They are numerous.
I was about to say one for the flyer, but, you know, 90% of the time, it's the bass's fault, as Dane from Duo Die would say. Yeah, but anyway, so...
I don't know, whips bass, are really mutually created. But.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of ways for people to mess it up. But the main thing that can happen for the bass is when the flyer swings through their legs in that, like, diamond position we talked about, their legs getting knocked around. So that can either, like, just make it sloppier getting back up, or the worst-case scenario would usually be the bass's legs travel behind them when the flyer's still kind of in that, like, swung through position. So there is, like, a spot that you can use there if you believe that's to be a real risk of what you're doing. And sometimes we call it, like, the birth the baby spot. But, like we said before, like, we really look at this as something that can be, like, calibrated to the point that you don't really need so much spotting. So... Yeah. There's, like, a way to do it. In whips, we actually usually find that we can do everything almost with no momentum. It might not look very whippy, but, like, it follows the exact same mechanics of a whip. And when we're teaching it, we try to encourage people to really master those, like, no momentum sort of stages, hands connected sort of stages, before they try to, like, have the flyer swing. Because we said, like, it's mainly a skill that the bass will have to kind of, like, catch the flyer because they're already under them. And it's hard for someone, an external spotter, to really, like, get in there and really, like, be a hero.
We also, the bass's legs drifting away from them is often a result of, like, the gathering momentum of the skill. And then the bass the bass isn't ready for that, like, force coming at them. So, you know, we try to teach the whips where it starts small so that the bass can feel like what they're going to have to resist. And then we, like, add more timing and more of a shape change. And then the swing becomes bigger. And hopefully the bass is prepared to kind of resist that.
So the flyer pitfall that I was thinking of, flyers diving is the thing. So one of the things people see is they see... Let's say we take that standard front swing. The bird, flyer starts in bird, and they whip through, like, to, like, ultra folded leaf. Reverse straddle bat, some would call it. And they come back up to bird. A lot of people get the impression that the flyer, like, dove. And maybe the flyer did dive, but we have found that gravity consistently brings you down. So when we start
it's
in bird...
It's pretty reliable.
When we start in bird and... I begin my tempo, which is just, like, literally, like, kind of a tiniest flick of, like, Emily's torso up, so there's an up to it. If she just changes her shape on the way down as gravity is bringing her down, that's enough to do, like, a standard front swing. And she'll swing up just as big, and it's largely because, like, continuation of momentum. I kind of get my feet into the position that most efficiently continues her swing up. Whereas, like, sometimes people are thinking, like, oh, it's a diving through the legs. So then they swing their torso into the hollow position from a more neutral position. And then that it really accelerates them. And if you're trying to time getting your knees out of the way of the flyer's shoulders and how much you're trying to bend your knees, as a base, like, you really want as much time as possible to be able to, like, hit your mark.
Yeah, I mean, it probably will become clear. We pride ourselves on our whips, and
elitist, some might say.
We think we're pretty good at whips. But the tempo that we use is this little lift from the bass to initiate, you know, a little lift from the toes. And then essentially as soon as I feel my torso starting to fall, that's when I change my shape. And that creates quite a lot of rotation. You know, that posterior pelvic tilt, straddle pike, hollow upper body, it'll rotate very well. And it actually is like this big, slow swing that comes around quite far. And I personally think that that looks really nice, as opposed to something that dives and kind of shoots through, but it doesn't have quite the same rotational arc that we try to go for. And it's also harder to pop then if you're trying to link it to something.
Yeah. And I guess we actually have like one more micro topic within this we have to get to, but one last like major component is building this idea of like smart feet from the base. So the actual action that the base needs to do with their feet and their knees and all that such is pretty complicated. There's like a complicated like pattern of turning your feet in and turning out, but like sometimes it's on your heel and sometimes it's on your toe. And like, it's going to be, you know, I've tried my best to describe these things in detail, but it's, you have to be practicing these things to really be able to get the full thing of it. But basically, like, you know, it looked amazing when I saw that first whip, the flyer like falling backwards and somehow like winding up in a bird. And, you know, there's this element of like moving your feet out of the way, but still grabbing the flyer and then like getting your feet back in at just the right timing so it looked like effortless. And it is a really cool feeling when these start to work, because it's like, how the hell did we like start to figure out that humans could do that?
Yeah.
So the whip back we kind of talked about. The whip back is different than the back whip. The name comes more from gymnastics, which it would be like a back handspring, which is like an arching backflip. But a whip back is a back handspring with no hands. So instead of placing your hands down as you arch back, you kind of go back in an arch, and then the flyer hollows and pikes to snap their body around. And in traditional Icarian games, this is a really common skill. And in a way, it is kind of a swinging movement around the base's feet. It's very much like a swinging movement. And there's even like front swing, like you see castaways done in this kind of way also. So this is like kind of like a whip pop, but it's done in a different style.
It also makes use of this change, this body shape change from arch to hollow, primarily as like a lower back pelvic tuck situation, because your pelvis is what's attached to your legs. And if your legs come around, then your body rotates, right? So it is kind of that same foundation of like switching from arch to hollow to create a spin, a rotation.
Yeah, like one way that it's, so that is one of the things is like the whip back actually uses an arch, whereas the whip pops, they never actually really arch.
You could make the argument that like the initial moment of the tempo, the flyer is like neutral spine, and then as it swings through, you aggressively hollow to create the rotation. But we have found that you don't need arch if you're just doing a whip.
Yeah, I think it's interesting if you looked at like a back, like a reverse thrown backwards whip pop. And you compared the action of that to a whip back, which would also come from a reverse thrown, and in a reverse thrown. So a whip back, the like more traditional Icarian games move, is like laying back through an arch, being popped through that, and then hollowing and piking to come around to seated. and the Whip Pop from Reverse Throne is a hollowing as you lean back, you whip around your straddle, and then you basically stay hollow as you're like micro-popped, or you slightly open your shape to what we would call like the sit phase, where you just basically come out of like super hollow to straight.
Yeah. My, like, you know, there's some technical differences there, like the base foot placement in a whip back is like on the flyer's like the back of their pelvis or lower back, and in a whip pop, they're popping through the very, very, very top of the thigh, you know, like the hip crease area. And so, you know, the levers are a little bit different, and that's why you can use an arch in one and no arch in the other.
Yeah, and I guess the other, like, way that you also see this kind of happen is less commonly, but you see sometimes, like, castaways done in tempo, usually in the more like Chinese style Vicarian. But what's interesting is they do full castaways in tempo. So they're popping from a bird through a reverse, well, it's essentially a front handspring, but they pop through the hand-to-hand, they get their feet like to like almost a throne, and they whip through like the inner thighs, and then a lot of times they never stop, or they never even like hit like a straight shape. They kind of continue into a folded leaf, essentially. It's quite interesting to see like how low a castaway can be done in this style. But that's like another style of kind of swinging around the beast's feet. So I think that's just like an interesting thing to look at, like historical precedence for this. The other thing that there's also like group swings, or there's like swing dancing sort of things where you would swing a dance, like a top dancer, a flyer, like around you in like different
like
swing dance styles, cradles, wraps.
Type of swinging that you can do in like a group acro situation. I think it's worth mentioning in this conversation just because it's like the timing of it. You know, so a whip that we do in L basing, with the flyer swinging on the bass's feet, it just has that same sort of like pendulum swing quality. And for people who are unfamiliar with it, having some point of reference or comparison is nice. So when I bass or fly swings in standing, it feels like it has that same kind of like up, down, back and forth kind of swing quality.
This might just be kind of off topic, but it's about whips. Most of the time when you're basing things, you're balancing something in an inverted pendulum. Like you're balancing something on top of you and you're stopping it from swaying like back and forth. In whips, it's one of the only skills where you're actually balancing a pendulum, mm-hmm. something that's like swinging like below your topmost point. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I thought about that, and I was like, I might not ever think about that again.
Might as well have it on the record.
Yeah. So, I think that's about good for today. Great work, everyone. I'm glad you could join us for another fabulous episode of AcroChats.
Come learn whips with us if you want.
We teach them in New York City
at
Warrior Bridge and at Cirque House if you come find us at the right time.
Catch us at a festival, maybe.
Maybe Colorado AcroFest.
February 2022.
You're welcome, Christine. We remember.
Shout out Nicole for editing, producing.
Yeah.
We'll see you next week.
Sounds good.
Warrior Bridge is a leading provider of online instruction in handstands, flexibility, movement, and partner acrobatics. Classes are filmed daily from our downtown Manhattan studio and live streamed around the globe to meet you wherever you are in the world. Our classes offer students the unique opportunity to receive real-time feedback and answers from expert instructors and connect to a movement community that spans the globe. If you aren't able to attend class in real time, you can catch class replays at any time via our on-demand library. Head over to warriorbridge.com to learn more.